I would recommend, and this may sound strange to you, I would actually recommend of an evening asking yourself whether what you had read either that day or the day before, how much of it, if anything, you have shared with others. One rule that I've set myself over the years, and I read an awful lot, as I've mentioned more than once, it's at least a book a day. I don't mean I read every page, but I read enough to know what's there, but I try never to read anything just for myself. For one thing, it'll protect you from wasting time. In other words, how can I, now I may not be able to anticipate, but at least in some way, how can I share this? I may not even quote anything from what I've read, but something has been sparked, I have been enlightened. I am better today than I was yesterday because of what I've read. That which I now know, thanks to the reading I've done, I will then proceed to share. Again, spiritual reading should be accompanied by some writing. There is a phrase in St. Augustine. I can't imagine putting it on the board, and I have a battery of these things in front of me. Let me just quote from St. Augustine. Studere sine stilo est dormire. Have you heard that? Studere, to study, or to studiously read, sine stilo, which is the pen without a pen, est dormire, which means what? To sleep. To read without some writing is to sleep. That doesn't mean that I copy out the whole page. That doesn't mean that I transcribe huge chunks of matter that I've read. Though for the young, I couldn't think of a better way to have them prepare themselves to begin to collect an anthology of things which they've read. Now, maybe 10 years later, looking at the photograph of their own mind, they'll say to themselves, what did I ever see in this? Well, even to make that judgment is valuable. So I strongly recommend that there be some writing. It may be afterwards, it may be while I'm writing, it may be as simple a thing as underlining, it may be some notation, something which will fortify the will to remember. And not just to remember, but to select. Because being wise, we know we can't write everything that we read, so enlightened self-interest will protect us from taking down too much. What we'll choose will happily be what is worth choosing. And it's the act of the will that is the single most important function in memory. Nothing substitutes for the will in memory. In its absence, a genius forgets. In the use of the will, if I want to remember, my dear friends, I will. And that will is not just an auxiliary verb. I will. I'll tell me, take means to remember. And one of the centuries tried and found Houston means his writing. As one who has written more than I want to admit myself, let me tell you, the humility of transcribing what somebody else has written and to make that part of my own mind is the beginning of wisdom. One more quality of spiritual reading before we close. Spiritual reading should somehow fructify in the spiritual life. It is not to remain just in the mind. It is to make us more humble, more patient, more prayerful, more obedient, in a word, more holy. All I know, and I'll close with this comment, at the end of my first year of novitiate, because we had to report every 2 weeks to the novice master, well, there was a kind of a summing up at the end of the year on how well I was doing. That's the same novice master who, after 2 months in the novitiate, you recall, told me, unless I improve in my humility, they will dismiss me from the order. So I had survived 12 months. I couldn't believe it. I was a Jesuit for 12 months. Had a long conference with a novice master. And among the things which I was so, pardon me, proud of, was the amount of spiritual reading that I had done. Well, he listened to me, and I just went on and on. I read this book and that book and the other book. Pieces, in knowing me, did you happen to count the number of books you've read since you've entered the novitiate? That's the first year. He said, come to think of it, yes. Would you want to see a list? He said, no, thanks. How many? 104. Well, he told me, cut it out. Cut down on the number of books you're reading. Do some more praying. So that spiritual reading is to make us more holy. And this is where those in charge of formation, you can tell quite well on how a religious is doing by the kind of reading that they practice, how much they do, and read a book and turn to some page in the life of some saint they've been reading and ask her sister, like, for example, Bernadette Soubirous, which I have recommended to by now quite a few people, her extraordinary humility, the way she was chewed up, you remember that, by the superior and told she was good for nothing, useless, and the superior kept coming to that. So, turn to whatever page it is, and sister, you have problems with humility. Have you reflected on this episode in the life of whatever saint he or she is reading? In other words, spiritual reading should be productive, not merely informative. I would think myself that a half an hour a day would be staple diet. Now, I would qualify that for those, again, who are involved in reading for preparation of class or whatever, things that are spiritual by their nature. Then I don't have to woodenly calculate, well, I've got to get this half an hour in. If it goes beyond that, they may just possibly, I think, especially if the person is otherwise occupied, because spiritual reading should be interesting. And you can get lost in a good book, right? That means we should be detached so that we just be just so much and put a marker in, then let go. I would see about a half an hour a day.
This concludes Father Hardin's conference on how to direct the spiritual reading of religious. Following is a question and answer session, which took place in Father Hardin's conferences.
Well, before we go on, any comments or questions regarding what we've seen?
I have a question, but it's really not regarding this, and it has to do with my thinking of asking Brother Knowles to dismiss one of the novices. I don't know if that can, is that a subject you'd rather discuss a long time? Just like you asked a question.
Well, I would say this is something which those in charge of formation have not just the right, but I would say sometimes the duty. Clearly, that's a very serious decision. On the other hand, if the one who presumably knows the person best interiorly leaves it up to the superior, I think it's unfair to the superior. Because the presumption is that, say, you would know more about this individual than Brother Camillus. I would secondly, first therefore, is to assume that it can be a duty. Secondly, yes. What I have found, again in counseling, I've never been a superior in my life. I have been happily spared. But I have counseled many superiors. I would say that before the person is dismissed, and I would almost assume that this would be the case here, the person should be warned. In other words, that say, I will ask or recommend your leaving. Remember, too, between dismissal and voluntary withdrawal is all the difference between the humiliation of being dismissed and, well, the decision that maybe this is not my life or I'm not equipped to live it. So I would recommend, maybe suggesting to the person, if you're convinced he's not fit, to withdraw. And it's remarkable how many people, unless they're obtuse, if shown that they just don't fit. Now this, you see, is hard to do because you don't like to face a person and trick out their defects, you see.
But I have done that, and he insists that he does belong. He feels very strongly that he belongs, and that's probably the only thing that even held him back long, is that his determination.
Well, then, this is the one in formation's responsibility. Remember, words are cheap. It's actions that cost. A person's claim, I want to belong, I want to be whatever virtue they lack, is not enough. They must also show by their conduct that what they claim is really true.
The personality type of, say, manipulative personality, does that usually cause problems in community? And also the personality type of, if I'm around, everything is just perfect, but if I should happen to step out the control, I can guarantee something is going to go wrong.
Well,
is that the type that should be something?
Well, I would like to, if it's because to save a vocation is very important. It cannot, however, be at the cost of other vocations or peace in the community. But I would say this, that if a person behaves the way you've indicated, it would seem to me that the person is capable of good behavior, because otherwise he wouldn't be well behaved. What they need is strong motivation. Now, one of the difficulties that a person in charge of others has is that you cannot always be around. And moreover, You say to yourself, well, if the person behaves when I'm around, why do they behave when I'm around and not when I'm not around?
Only if I'm visible. Even when I'm around, I can catch things. As soon as I catch it, I mention something.
Well, that I would theory. I'm speaking from just what you shared. Well, that I think would bring out what we've said so many times by now during the second semester. The importance of greater selectivity in admitting people to the religious life. And this is where, and yesterday we spent several hours with the major superiors here in discussing this. I cannot tell you how deeply convinced I am, in good faith, goodwill, but many communities have simply made drastic mistakes in their obtaining vocations. That the only way to obtain vocations that is sure is the way Christ obtained vocations. How did he obtain vocations? By looking for them, seeking them, and choosing them. What I really think in the United States, which has such a preoccupation with independence, liberty is our middle name. So what have we done? We try to make ourselves known and appeal or attract, not even notice by spiritual things. That's not enough. To watch sisters, I've seen pictures, you know, sisters canoeing or sisters playing volleyball. Well, I think that's legitimate to, as a kind of a come on, a sort of an eye catcher. Gee, I didn't know that sisters play volleyball. Well, now, there's no telling what sisters will do. You heard, haven't you, that Dubuque has a new mayor. Have you heard of this, brother? Which, of course, is doing untold damage to religious life. But it's not only not doing that to attract vocations by the cords of Adam or the strands of Eve, but even along spiritual lines, to promise the people, for example, well, they will live a life of prayer, peace with God, and consolation. I was not usually that crude, but you know, that too, I think, is not quite fair. I almost believe, and I haven't, though I did prepare this conference, I didn't give it enough time to be absolutely sure, but I'm almost absolutely sure that we should not advertise religious communities. In the sense of making them appealing, even spiritually, which I consider advertising. When you advertise, you make whatever you want to sell appealing so that somebody will buy it. But rather, first you've got to know people, and there must be enough to choose from. And whatever ways people can come into the, well, ambit of your consciousness, of your experience. Give them a chance to be themselves in real life situations. And watch them. Listen to them. Talk to them, and especially have them talk to you. And then tell people, I think you have a vocation. The year after my ordination, we have still one more year of theology. In my case, I had 4 years after ordination of studies. But the year after my ordination, I was in theology, and I was just fresh from the priesthood, and I wanted to do everything, not to waste a minute. We had one day off. Every Thursday was off. And we were not to do much studying Those are the orders of obedience. So what do? I want to keep busy. So I asked the superior director, can I give vocation talks? What do you mean, vocation talks? I said, yes. Talk about vocations to the priesthood and the religious life. Where are you going to go? I don't know. I'll just call people up. He thought it was silly, but he says, go ahead. So I called people up. Priests we had going out on supply to different parts of Indiana. So I could bum a ride. So they wouldn't have to furnish me special transportation. I called up the pastor. And I'd say that we're going out on supply. Maybe I was going there too to help out with confessions and Mass on Sundays. Even if I wasn't going, somebody else was. Would you mind if I gave some vocation talks? But he was so surprised, they'd usually say yes. Well, wonderful experiences. Classrooms, little kids. I marveled at sisters. What do they do with those first graders? What do you tell them? For 5 hours a day, how do you keep them from climbing the walls? In one classroom, I gave my little speech for about 10 minutes with a few questions from the students, about the sixth grade. The sister in charge of the classroom, she said, Father, do you mind if I say a few words to the children? Okay. Children, she said, a Jesuit priest came to the classroom when I was a girl your age, and she mentioned the city. He talked to us about vocations, encouraged the girls to become sisters and the boys to become brothers or priests. When he finished his little talk, the sister said, he looked around for several minutes. Then he said, you, and you, and you. He picked six of us. You have vocations. I was one of the six. So I asked sister, did you all enter? Yes, you all six. Two boys and four girls. Did you all persevere? We all persevered. Isn't that remarkable? Well, I told the children that Father did it, but I can't do it. This is sparked by what you're saying, brother. I think many communities are struggling with people who don't really have the grace. And God gives it. And it's our duty to find out who has the grace before we take them. Or once they're in, to find out if they've got the grace. And then it's very simple, but we have to know how to talk. Some have the grace for this vocation, others have a grace for another vocation. And all the formation of the world will be wasted efforts unless there's somebody to form. They must be persons chosen by the Master. That was a long answer to a short question.